Hello and welcome to another edition of Yellow Star China News. Today is January 14th, 2019. The first article for today comes from spaceflightnow.com entitled China Releases More Images from Far Side of the Moon. Chinese officials on Friday released more imagery from the Chang'e 4 mission, a robotic lander and rover exploring the far side of the moon after a successful landing January 3rd. The imagery released Friday included a new view of China's U-22 rover captured by a camera aboard the Chang'e lander, a panoramic vista of the austere lunar landscape, and a sped-up video showing the spacecraft's final descent to the moon from the view of the probe's descent camera. Chang'e 4 was set to enter a low-power sleep mode Sunday as the sun set on the landing site in Von Karman Crater, a bowl-shaped depression measuring around 110 miles, 180 kilometers, in diameter, located in the southern hemisphere of the far side of the moon. Nighttime lasts 14 days on the lunar surface, as the moon orbits the Earth once every 28 days, and temperatures are predicted to dip to minus 297 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 183 degrees Celsius, as the sun disappears below the horizon at the Von Karman Crater. Chang'e 4 will switch to a sleep mode as night falls, as solar energy will no longer be available to power the probe. The spacecraft carries a radioisotope heat source and power generator to keep warm and generate electricity when the sun is below the horizon. The device was developed in collaboration between Russian and Chinese experts, according to China's state-run Xinhua News Agency. The small electricity generator is not big enough to power the entire lander, but it will allow sensors to gather temperature data on the lunar surface throughout the night, Xinhua reported. A capability not carried on Chang'e 3, China's previous lunar lander, which touched down on the near side of the moon in 2013. The descent camera video shows the Chang'e 4 spacecraft approaching the lunar surface, first flying on a horizontal trajectory, then transitioning to a vertical descent phase. Chang'e 4's landing sequence lasted around 12 minutes, beginning with ignition of the probe's variable thrust descent engine to slow the craft's horizontal velocity from 3,800 miles per hour. 1.7 kilometers per second to nearly zero. Then the spacecraft pitched over, a maneuver visible in the video released by the China National Space Administration on Friday, at an altitude of around 20,000 feet, or 6 kilometers above the moon. The video released by the Chinese Space Agency is sped up about 2.5 times normal speed, and it illustrates the difficulty of navigating across the airless lunar landscape. It's challenging to visually ascertain the lander's altitude, or gauge the relative size of the numerous craters visible in the video, but Chang'e 4 carried a laser ranging instrument to measure the spacecraft's altitude and descent rate, feeding data to the probe's guidance computer throughout the landing sequence. The Chang'e 4 spacecraft paused its descent around 330 feet 100 meters above the surface to search for safest place to touch down, using hazard avoidance algorithms to steer clear of craters and boulders in the final seconds of the landing. Chang'e 4's engine can be seen kicking up first before plopping down on four legs, achieving the first ever soft landing on the far side of the moon at 0226 GMT on January 3rd. Early results from the Chang'e 4 mission suggest the landing site in Von Karman Crater has fewer rocks strewn on its surface than Chang'e 3's landing site on the near side of the moon. The surface at Von Karman Crater also appears to be covered in a thicker layer of fine dust. The far side of the moon is more rugged than the near side, so Chinese officials adjusted the descent trajectory for the Chang'e 4's mission to a more vertical profile for the curved profile used on Chang'e 3, China's previous lunar lander, which touched down on the near side in 2013. "We chose a vertical descent strategy to avoid the influence of the mountains on the flight track," said Zheng He, executive director of the Chang'e 4 probe project from the China Academy of Space Technology, said in a report published by the Xinhua News Agency. On Earth, the landing craft weighs around 2,600 pounds, 1,200 kilograms, without its propellant, and is about the size of a car. A few hours after landing, China's 297-pound, 135-kilogram U-22 rover rolled off the Chang'e 4's stationary landing platform to begin exploring. The U-22 rover was named after the mobile robot named U-2 that flew on the Chang'e 3's mission to the moon in 2013. U-2 means jade rabbit in Chinese and is the name of the pet rabbit of the moon goddess Chang'e in Chinese folklore, the namesake of China's lunar missions. Chang'e 4's lander and rover were originally built as spares for Chang'e, then modified for a new mission on the backside of the moon after Chang'e 3's successful landing. A video released by Chinese space officials are posted on YouTube by the Planetary Society shows the U-2-2 rover driving on the moon, then using its wheels to turn in place. Chang'e 4's carries a low-frequency radio spectrometer developed by Chinese scientists for astrophysics research. A German-developed neutron and dosimetry instrument on the stationary lander will measure radiation levels at the Chang'e 4's landing site, collecting data that could be useful in planning human exploration of the lunar far side. Studying solar activity and gauging the underground water content in Von Karman crater. U-2-2 hosts a ground-penetrating radar to study geologic layers buried under the landing site, and a visible and near-infrared spectrometer to gather data on soil composition. Chinese officials approved the addition of a Swedish instrument on the rover to study the interaction between the solar wind and the lunar surface, which is not shielded by an atmosphere from the bombardment of charged particles originating at the sun. Chang'e 4 also delivered to the moon a student-designed carrier containing potato seeds and silkworm eggs. University students and scientists will monitor the growth of the organisms, which are housed inside a chamber and fed natural light and nutrients once on the solar surface. Chinese officials said Chang'e 4's landing site is located at 177.6 degrees east longitude and 45.5 degrees south latitude on the moon, in a region known as South Pole Aitken Basin. The basin covers a large swath of the lunar far side southern hemisphere and is believed by scientists to be one of the most ancient impact sites in the solar system, created when a large asteroid or comet struck the moon. Scientific data and images from Chang'e 4 are relayed back to Earth through a dedicated communication satellite China launched last year. The Qiuqiao, or Magpie Bridge, spacecraft is positioned beyond the moon with an antenna in view of both Chang'e 4 and Earth, allowing it to relay commands and signals between ground controllers and the lander. Chang'e 4 was the 20th spacecraft in history to safely land on the moon, and China's second lunar lander. China's next lunar mission, Chang'e 5, could launch by the end of 2019 to land on the moon, scoop up samples, and return the specimens to scientists on Earth for analysis in ground-based labs. The second article for today comes from Channel News Asia, entitled China's First Cyber-Distant Faces Trials. China's first cyber-distant, whose website reported on sensitive topics including human rights, is expected to go on trial on Monday, amid fears he is in bad health, sources familiar with the matter told AFP. Huang Qi was arrested in 2016 for leaking state secrets and has since been held at the Mianyang Detention Center in southwestern Sichuan Province, his home region, without a trial date. Calls to the Mianyang Intermediate People's Court, which is handling the case, were unanswered. American diplomats attempted to attend Huang Qi's trial but were denied access to the courtroom, a U.S. Embassy spokesperson told AFP. Several activists who said they were traveling to Mianyang to attend the trial sent photos and videos to AFP showing police stopping them en route Monday morning. Huang ran a website called 64 Tianwang, named after the bloody June 4, 1989 crackdown on Tiananmen Square pro-democracy protesters. The site, which has reported on local corruption, human rights violations, and other topics rarely seen in ordinary Chinese media, is blocked on the mainland. A volunteer at 64 Tianwang told AFP that he was taken away on holiday Saturday by Sichuan police, who cited the cyber distance trial that was due to start this week. "I'm worried for his safety," the volunteer said on condition of anonymity. "But Huang Qi is a very proud person. He won't surrender." The volunteer was told he would be released once the trial was over. Mianyang police did not answer AFP's calls for a comment. Chinese police in recent years have muzzled dissent by whisking away activists and holding them in a hotel room during sensitive events, giving rise to the term being traveled. 14 non-profit organizations, including Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and Freedom House, released a statement last November saying Huang was in danger of dying in police custody if he does not receive medical treatment for a host of severe health conditions. Huang suffers from high blood pressure and late-stage kidney disease, but his mother, Pu Wenqing's attempts to get medical bail were denied in the past. Huang's work has repeatedly drawn the ire of Chinese authorities. In 2009, he was sentenced to 3 years in prison after campaigning for parents of children killed in the 2008 Sichuan earthquake, which left nearly 87,000 people dead or missing and authorities facing huge public anger over shoddy building construction. 5 years later, Huang and at least three citizen journalists who contribute to 64 Tianwang were detained by police after the site reported on a woman who set herself on fire in Tiananmen Square. The website was awarded a Reporters Without Borders prize in early November of 2016. A few weeks later, Huang was detained in his hometown of Chengdu, according to Amnesty International. The third article for today comes from BBC News entitled Chinese Coal Mine Roof Collapse in Shanxi Kills 21. At least 21 miners died when a roof collapsed in a coal mine in northern China, officials say. 66 miners were rescued after the accident on Saturday at the Lijiago mine near the city of Shenmu in Shanxi province. The cause of the collapse is under investigation, the official Xinhua news agency reported. Mining accidents in China are quite common despite efforts to improve safety. The Lijiago mine is operated by the Baiji Mining Company, Xinhua said. No further details of the incident were available. Last October, 21 coal miners were killed when an underground rock fall blocked a shaft in eastern Shandong province. According to the latest figures from China's National Coal Mine Safety Administration, there were 375 deaths in coal mines in 2017, a fall of about 28% on the previous year. In a statement last January, the Bureau said the situation of coal mine safety production is still grim despite improvements. The fourth article comes from The Atlantic, entitled Why 1984 Isn't Banned in China. Last winter, after the Chinese Communist Party announced the abolition of presidential term limits, Beijing temporarily moved to censor social media references to George Orwell's Animal Farm and 1984. The government's concern was that activists would use these titles to charge in not-so-subtle code that China was moving in a decidedly authoritarian direction. But censors did not bother to ban the sale of these texts either in bookstores or online. It was and remains as easy to buy 1984 in Animal Farm in Shenzhen or Shanghai as it is in London or Los Angeles. The different treatment of these texts and their titles helps illuminate the complicated reality of censorship in China. It's less comprehensive, less boot on the face, as Orwell might have put it, and quirkier than many Westerners imagine. Censors have banned books simply for containing a positive or even neutral portrayal of the Dalai Lama. The government disallows the publication of any work by Liu Xiaobo, the determined critic of the Communist Party, who in 2017 became the first Nobel Peace Prize winner since Nazi times to die in prison. Again, for a time last year, Chinese citizens could not type 1980 and 4 in sequence, but they could and still can buy a copy of 1984, the most famous novel on authoritarianism ever written. Prefer Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, they can buy that text too, just as easily, although its title also joined the taboo list last winter. Here is the rub. Monitors pay closer attention to material that might be consumed by the average person than to cultural products seen as highbrow and intended for educated groups, an internet form versus an old novel. As a result, Chinese writers are watched more closely than foreign ones. Liu Xiaobo versus Orwell. Another rule of thumb is that more leeway is given to unimaginative works about authoritarianism than ones that specifically engage with this manifestation in post-1949 China, 1984 versus a book on the Dalai Lama. When a book crosses some lines but not others, censors generally use a scalpel rather than a sledgehammer. That explains the status of Brave New World, Revisited, Huxley's non-fiction work in which he argued that autocrats in the Soviet Union and China were combining the rule-through-distraction techniques outlined in Brave New World and the rule-through-fear methods detailed in 1984. Chinese readers on the mainland can find copies of this highbrow book by a foreigner pretty easily, but censors have surgically excised all direct references to Mao's China. These patterns may suggest that censors take a rather dim view of their audience's abilities that they believe Chinese citizens are unable to draw a connection between the political situation Orwell described and the nature of the government unless prompted to do so by a rabble-rouser on the internet. More likely, they are motivated by elitism or classism. Analogously, in the United States, the MPAA slaps movies with an R rating if they depict nudity, but there's no warning system for museums that display nude sculptures. The assumption is not that Chinese people can't figure out the meaning of 1984, but that the small number of people who will bother to read it won't pose much of a threat. At an elite level, the rules in China have always been and still are more relaxed. When the first simplified character Chinese translation of 1984 was published in 1979, it was kept in a special section of libraries and bookstores that was off-limits to most people. The Lao Bai Xing, the common people, couldn't get their hands on the book until 1985. Today, graduate students can have much more nuanced and frank discussions about controversial periods in Chinese history than even college undergraduates. There are three basic reasons for these disparities. Elites must, by definition, have skin in the game in relation to the ruling party. The government knows it can't really stop well-connected, highly educated citizens from acquiring the information they want, in part because they're able to travel abroad and expose themselves to a variety of materials there, and the authorities are aware that a touch of liberty is often better than a boot in the face to keep people in line. Western commentators often give the impression that Chinese censorship is more comprehensive than it really is due, in part to a veritable obsession with the government's handling of the so-called three T's, Taiwan, Tibet, and Tiananmen. In 2013, there was an article in the New York Review of Books that stated, for example, that to this day, Tiananmen is one of the neuralgic words forbidden, not always successfully on China's internet. Any book, article, or social media post that so much as mentions these words that conventional wisdom holds is liable to disappear. Even when it comes to the three T's, though, things are a bit less simple than they appear. Contra the New York Review of Books references to Tiananmen as a place, a tourist attraction, and so on, fill the web in China. What's verbatim is reference to the killings that took place around there or to the date of the 1989 massacre, June 4th. Moreover, although on the mainland no bookstore would dare stock a work by a Chinese author that mentions the massacre, there is some discussion of this taboo topic in the mainland translation of a biography of Deng Xiaoping by Ezra Vogel, a prominent American scholar. The government's approach to contentious individuals can be as surprising as its approach to contentious texts. On occasion, the government cracks down fiercely. The exiled writer Ma Jian, who has compared Xi's China to 1984, told the New York Times that, to Chinese readers, "I'm a dead man," referencing to the total ban on his books on the mainland. In July of last year, the political cartoonist Zhang Yiufei was sentenced to 6.5 years in prison for inciting subversion of state power and illegally crossing the border. But some writers, including Chan Kuncheng, occupy a more liminal space. His most famous book, The Fat Years, is banned on the mainland because it invokes indirectly the collective state-sponsored amnesia of the 1989 massacre near Tiananmen Square. Nevertheless, in October, he was allowed to host a BBC radio event in Beijing, which was open to the public. There he discussed, among other things, the debt his novel owed to Orwell and Huxley. Although the program was conducted in English, the audience was majority Chinese, and many audience members had managed to read his banned novel, whether by obtaining a copy from Taiwan or Hong Kong, or by downloading the pirated version that lived online for 6 months before censors scrubbed it away. Chan said recently over the phone from his home in Beijing that, although he was anxious about the event, he hopes that his avoidance of specifically political activities will help protect him. "The only thing I do is write. I don't join any groups or sign petitions. Apart from writing, I do nothing. That's the only thing I do, and I have to keep doing it." Perhaps the most famous writer to live in China's limbo between freedom and oppression is Yan Liangke, the subject of a recent New Yorker profile by Jia Yangfan. Yan lives in Beijing, teaches at the prestigious Renmin University, and is considered a hero in his home village in Henan, a poor northern province. His most famous works include Serve the People, a satire of the Cultural Revolution that features vivid sex scenes, and Dream of Ding Village, which deals with the taboo subject of the AIDS crisis that ravaged Henan in the 1990s. Both are banned on the Chinese mainland, although Fan notes that the ban is de facto rather than official, and his less tendentious title remain somewhat available. The somewhat is key. It is rare for the government to ban an author's oeuvre in its entirety. publishers have some leeway to make decisions on a case-by-case basis, and the publisher in Shanghai may come to a different conclusion than a publisher in Sichuan. These disparities are a result of individual judgment calls and the specific relationships between publishers and their local censorship authorities. When the Berlin Wall came down in 1989, the first thing some East Berliners did was rush to fabled West Berlin department stores. One reason the Chinese Communist Party has outlived so many predictions of its imminent demise in the wake of what political scientist Ken Jewitt dubbed the Leninist extinction is that China's leaders have been intent since the early 1990s to allow citizens at least partial access to consumer goods, including cultural products that are available to their counterparts in other parts of the world. They know that if they keep the lid on too tight, they could stoke envy, and that envy could turn into a serious political problem. Wow. It comes from The Guardian, entitled, "In China, they are closing churches, jailing pastors, and even rewriting scripture." In late October, the pastor of one of China's best-known underground churches asked this of his congregation: had they successfully spread the gospel throughout their city? If tomorrow morning the Early Rain Covenant Church suddenly disappeared from the city of Chengdu, if each of us vanished into thin air, would this city be any different? Would anyone miss us? Said Wang Yi, leaning over his pulpit and pausing to let the question weigh on his audience. I don't know. Almost 3 months later, Wang's hypothetical scenario is being put to the test. The church in southwest China has been shuttered, and Wang and his wife, Zhang Rong, remain in detention after police arrested more than 100 Early Rain Church members in December. Many of those who haven't been detained are in hiding. Others have been sent away from Chengdu and barred from returning. Some, including Wang's mother and his young son, are under close surveillance. Wang and his wife are being charged for inciting subversion, a crime that carries a penalty of up to 15 years in prison. Now the hall Wang preached from sits empty. The pulpit and cross that once hung behind them have gone. Prayer cushions have been replaced by a ping-pong table and a film of dust. New tenants, a construction company, and a business association occupy the three floors the church once rented. Plainclothes police stand outside, turning away those looking for the church. One of the officers told The Observer, "I have to tell you to leave and watch until you get in a car and go." Early Rain is the latest victim of what Chinese Christians and rights activists say is the worst crackdown on religion since the country's Cultural Revolution, when Mao Zedong's government vowed to eradicate religion. Researchers say the current drive, fueled by government unease over the growing number of Christians and their potential links to the West, is aimed not so much at destroying Christianity, but bringing it to heel. The government has orchestrated a campaign to sinicize Christianity, to turn Christianity into a fully domesticated religion that would do the bidding of the party, said Lian Shi, a professor at Duke University in North Carolina who focuses on Christianity in modern China. Over the past year, local governments have shut hundreds of unofficial congregations or house churches that operate outside the government-approved church network, including Early Rain. A statement signed by 500 house church leaders in November says authorities have removed crosses from buildings, forced churches to hang the Chinese flag and sing patriotic songs, and bar minors from attending. Churchgoers say the situation will get worse as the campaign reaches more of the country. Another church in Chengdu was placed under investigation last week. Less than a week after the mass arrest of Early Rain members, police raided a children's Sunday school at a church in Guangzhou. Officials have also banned the 1,500-member Zion Church in Beijing after its pastor refused to install CCTV. In November, the Guangzhou Bible Reform Church was shut for the second time in 3 months. The Chinese Communist Party, CCP, wants to be the God of China and the Chinese people. But according to the Bible, only God is God. The government is scared of the churches, said Huang Xiaoning, the church's pastor. Local governments have also shut the state-approved Sanzi churches. Sunday schools and youth ministries have been banned. One of the first signs of a crackdown was when authorities forcibly removed more than 1,000 crosses from Sanzi churches in Zhejiang province between 2014 and 2016. The goal of the crackdown is not to eradicate religions, said Ying Fuk Tsang, director of the Christian Study Center on Chinese Religion and Culture at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. President Xi Jinping is trying to establish a new order on religion, suppressing its blistering development. The government aims to regulate the religious market as a whole. While the CCP is officially atheist, Christianity is one of the five religions sanctioned by the government, and religious freedom has been enshrined in the Constitution since the 1980s. For decades, authorities tolerated the house churches, which refused to register with government bodies, that required church leaders to adapt teaching to follow party doctrine. As China experienced an explosion in the number of religious believers, the government has grown wary of Christianity and Islam in particular with their overseas links. In Xinjiang, a surveillance and internment system has been built for Muslim minorities, notably the Uyghurs. Xi has called for the country to guard against infiltration through religion and extremist ideology. What happens in Xinjiang and what happens to house churches is connected, said Eva Pills, a professor of law at King's College London, focusing on human rights. Those kinds of new attitudes have translated into different kinds of measures against Christians, which amount to intensified persecution of religious groups. There are at least 60 million Christians in China, spanning rural and urban areas. Congregation-based churches can organize large groups across the country, and some have links with Christian groups abroad. Pastors such as Wang of Early Rain are especially alarming for authorities. Under Wang, a legal scholar and public intellectual, the church has advocated for parents of children killed in the 2008 Sichuan earthquake deaths, many critics say were caused by poor government around construction, or for families of those affected by faulty vaccines. Every year the church commemorates victims of the 4th of June protests in 1989, which were forcibly put down by the Chinese military. Early Rain Church is one of the few who dare to face what is wrong in society, said one member. Most churches don't dare talk about this, but we obey strictly the Bible, and we don't avoid anything. Wang and Early Rain belong to what some see as a new generation of Christians that have emerged alongside a growing civil rights movement. Increasingly, activist church leaders have taken inspiration from the democratizing role the church played in Eastern European countries, in the Soviet bloc or South Korea under martial law, according to Lian. Several of China's most active human rights lawyers are Christians. They have come to see the political potential of Christianity as a force for change, said Lian. But what really makes the government nervous is Christianity's claim to universal rights and values. As of 2018, the government has implemented sweeping rules on religious practices, adding more requirements for religious groups and barring unapproved organizations from engaging in any religious activity. But the campaign is not just about managing behavior. One of the goals of a government work plan for promoting Chinese Christianity between 2018 and 2022 is thought reform. The plan calls for retranslating and annotating the Bible to find commonalities with socialism and establish a correct understanding of the text. 10 years ago, we used to be able to say the party was not really interested in what people believed internally, said Pills. Xi Jinping's response is much more invasive, and it is in some ways returning to Mao-era attempts to control hearts and minds. Bibles, sales of which have always been controlled in China, are no longer available for sale online, a loophole that has existed for years. In December, Christmas celebrations were banned in several schools and cities across China. Last year's crackdown is the worst in 3 decades, said Bob Fu, the founder of China Aid, a Christian advocacy group based in the US. In Chengdu, Early Rain has not vanished. Before the raid, a plan was in place to preserve the church, with those who were not arrested expected to keep it running, holding meetings wherever they could. Slowly, more Early Rain members are being released. As of 9 of January, at least 25 were still in detention. They maintain contact through encrypted platforms. On New Year's Eve, 300 people joined an online service, some from their homes, others from cars or workplaces, to pray for 2019. Others gather in small groups in restaurants and parks. One member, a student who was sent back to Guangzhou, said he preaches the gospel to the police who monitor him. The church continues to send out daily scripture and post videos of sermons. In one, Pastor Wang alludes to the coming crackdown. In this war, in Xinjiang, in Shanghai, in Beijing, in Chengdu, the rulers have chosen an enemy that can never be imprisoned, the soul of man. Therefore, they are doomed to lose this war. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next time. Be sure to like my Facebook page, Yellow Star, China News. Goodbye.